Welcome to Tales of a Per Entrepreneur with your host, Dr. Biz, aka Jamie Reeves.
Welcome to Tales of a Per Entrepreneur, a podcast that tells the stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And if you're a business owner and a parent, I salute you, as they are two of the hardest things you can do, and you are doing both together. I'm your host, Jamie Reeves, aka Dr. Biz, and on today's episode is a guest from the world of property investing. Craig is a property investor and developer based in the northeast of England. He's been actively involved in property since 2006 and went full-time in late 2019. Mainly focused in the guest accommodation sector at present, creating guest houses and boutique hotels aimed at modernising the sector with automation whilst continuing to offer a world-class service. He's been married to Laura for over 15 years and they have two children, Chloe, who is 10, and Brody, who is 7. So ladies and gents, please give a warm welcome to Mr. Craig Rowan.
What a welcome. Thank you very much, Jamie. Lovely to be here, mate.
Do you know, I made the one mistake, I forgot, I do it all the time, is I usually ask how you pronounce your last name or if there's a name that I'm not sure of. So did I get it right?
It's Rowan, but I take Rowan. So, yeah, but listen, Rowan's fine, mate. It's absolutely fine.
Not a problem. Good stuff. So how are you doing today? Are you well?
I'm amazing, mate. I'm very good. Very good. How are you? You good?
Yeah, really, really good. Thank you. Really good. Leg day at the gym, so I might not be so much later on. But right as we sit at the moment, we're all grand. Good. So how does someone make property investing their job? How did you get to where you are?
How long have you got? It's been a long process, Jamie, a long process. So I fell into property by chance, as a lot of people do. My father, you'd class him as an entrepreneur nowadays, but back in the 80s, a wheeler dealer, all right? So he was a bookie by trade. Had his own turf accountants, bookmaker shops. He stood at the race courses. He had a pub, a cafe, and he picked up a couple of properties by chance. And as he got later in life and retired from being a bookie, he seen that property was the way forward. So I had this real insight into how it worked being a landlord, and I seen that it was a profitable way to make money. So through what I'd learned through him, I thought we'll give this a go when I had the opportunity. Myself and my wife, we'd bought our own home and we then managed to pick up our first buy-to-let. And that was in 2006, the first buy-to-let. And it just stumbled along for years, to be honest. And then as I got wiser and older and I seen this can be maybe it's a career path, so started to take a bit more focus on it, and it's led to where we are today.
So how did you make the transition then from kind of being an investor on the side that was doing it to build your portfolio and I guess serve your needs as a family and looking ahead towards retirement? I guess that's another reason why you would invest in property to start, to then doing it as your full-time job. I mean, interested to know how you kind of switch over to that, really.
Really weird, because a few things happened around about the same time which kind of put me on my path. So the first one was, so my background was in the financial sector, worked in building societies from a cashier up to branch manager. Going off topic here, but it finds a way on how to come back. I decided in 2007 that I was going to go out on my own and become an independent mortgage broker. So I'd done mortgages for the building society, and I thought I can make more money doing it myself. Literally 6 weeks after I went full self-employed, Northern Rock collapsed, and people may remember that in 2007, and then we moved into the global financial crisis. So my timing was absolutely perfect. And it got to the point where I just couldn't make money at that anymore. So I ended up taking a job with the DWP, working in the job centre, and that took me a path down working in youth engagement and youth employability, working for a charity called Rathbone. Really rewarding job. But third sector, money wasn't great, and I ended up having to take a little bit of a deviation to a tech company, but it was to help my youth. So what happened was I ended up back on the road as a salesperson, covering the whole of the UK, selling this tech, and working with local authorities, working with sports clubs, football clubs. And my daughter, I FaceTimed one night. I was in London, and my daughter and I FaceTimed. She would be three or four with my wife, and she was in tears, missing her daddy. Why wasn't I at home? And that night was heartbreaking, to be honest. And I thought to myself, right, I need to change something here. And property might be the way forward. I then had, unfortunately, my parents passed in the space of a couple of years together. And, yeah. And I started getting in my late 30s, early 40s and saying, nah, I need to take a grip on my life. You know, my dad, as I say, was an entrepreneur, a wheeler dealer. He was an animal. He whatever he wanted, he went after it and he got it. And I'd kind of got a bit, I'd risk averse because of losing my income in 2007, 2008. And I thought, you know what? What's the worst that can happen? Take control of my destiny. Property is the way to do it. So it was an accumulation of things, Jamie, which got me to that point. And yeah, it was a bit of a Tony Robbins moment where, you know, to take the island, you have to burn the boats. And I kind of done that, basically.
So I'm guessing then it was pretty much that phone call with your daughter that changed your life and changed your path then.
Absolutely. That really kicked me into gear, because I could have still been on the road now, you know, and earning an okay living and you know, but living out of hotels and just, yeah, not being around for them growing up. My dad, again, I go back to my dad, big influence on my life, was my best friend as well. And what a childhood he gave myself and my brother. But he worked 7 days a week. The bookies shops are open 7 days a week. There was racing Monday to Sunday. And from March, April time to October, we never seen him. And we got a great holiday at the half term in October, but, you know, we wanted our dad around and we didn't see it. And I was like, this is just history repeating. It's not a shop. I'm in hotels. I'm in, you know, council buildings. I'm in a car going up and down motorways. The place is different, but it's the same story. And I wanted to be around for my kids. So yeah, that phone call that night, sat in the hotel room in London, was a big impact. And then what transpired a few months later with unfortunately my dad passed second, it was just a catalyst to move it forward.
I had a similar kind of situation with one of my kids. Not so much them pulling on my heartstrings at them, but I was at a gig because I used to do a lot of wedding singing, as you know.
Yeah.
And my wife was on, Jack would have been about two or three, and he was at a fire station open day. And they sent me pictures of him playing with a hose and sat in the fire station. I just thought, as lovely as this venue is and as lovely as the gigs that I'm doing are, what the fuck am I doing? I'm missing out on so much. And from that point on, that was then where I started to put in those systems and processes, started to put in the automation and started using delegation to then create the kind of life that I wanted to live. And I think that's such an important lesson, isn't it? That we get taught by our kids, and some people will listen to it and some people won't.
You've hit the nail on the head, Jamie. It's, you know, it's everybody comes to a realisation at some point. It's whether you come to a realisation when they're 20 or whether you come to a realisation when they're still little and you can make a change. Because I've heard so many stories about people saying, I wish I'd done it differently. I wish I'd been the wrong for my kids. And they're in their 50s and their 60s and the kids are growing up. And I've heard it and it's sad, but there's a point where people will take a grasp of it and say, right, I'm going to do something different. Or they just, because of the lifestyle, keeping the bills up, whatever it may be, they just continue going through it and regretting it later on.
Yeah. So what does a typical day look for you like now then, now that you've got this better work-life balance?
So I'd love to say there was a typical day, but if I try and when I have an ideal day, because there's a lot of headaches, a lot of problems, and the guest accommodation field is very reactive, because you're dealing with clients all day, every day. You could have one client, you could have 24 clients, and depending on their needs and what's happened, so it can be quite reactive. But ideally, the days, you know, I'm very much I set the first hour of the day up for myself, so I'm up early. You know, I'm not going to shout about the 5 a.m. club, but I'm up pretty sharp, and I journal, I plan my day. I will exercise if I'm in that. I'm a runner, or I claim I'm a runner, so I'll be out running. And then it's assisting Laura, my wife, and getting the kids ready for school. And fortunately, most mornings I can take the kids to school as well. So I've got one who's at first school, and one, we've got three tiered schools. One's just started middle school. They still want me to take them, which is great, or their mum. It'll not be long before they want to go with their mates. So yeah, I'll take advantage of that. And then it's a pretty hectic morning. Busy just with what I've got planned, because I do try and finish up later in the afternoon. Whether that's school pickup if I've got an early start, or whether it's certainly for dinner time, is the aim. Not always the case, but that's the ideal day, basically.
So in your bio that you sent me, you were talking about wanting to kind of create automation within the property world. So how does that look like for you then? Because if you're, I'm guessing most of the things that come up for you are more kind of sorting problems out as they happen. So how do you go about automating that and then giving yourself more time so that you can do more of the things that you want to do?
Sure. So what we've tried to do is, the tagline is that we've tried to bring guest houses to the 21st century. So a lot of people think of B&Bs and guest houses as the landlord or the landlady greeting you at the door, handing you the key, on the stairs, passing them on the stairs, or stood in the kitchen. And what we're trying to do is have a mixture between a home-from-home experience, like a guest house, and a hotel experience. So the automation comes in where it's online check-in, key code entry, information sent to them by WhatsApp, by email. So they really can do it themselves, basically. And then if there's anything needed on top of that, you know, there's online guides and they can speak with us by text, but still have that interaction through the daytime, so they still know that there's someone there. So offering that world-class service, as I like to put it. So, you know, people, I try to model it on how I like to travel. I'm quite insular. If I don't need to see anybody, that's absolutely perfect. So I try and do it like that. But then, you know, greeting someone at the door or just saying, hi, I'm Craig, by the way. And a lot of people love that. Oh, you know, and great idea. And you get to chat. And then obviously if things don't work out, or you know what it's like, Jamie, when you're dealing with customers, you know, 85%, in my opinion, are amazing. And then you get 15% where you could give them the earth and they still wouldn't be happy. So it's dealing with that 15%. We're very much driven on reviews. So it's giving that excellent customer service. It may work out or not work out the way they want it, but making sure that you've given the best service that you can, because ultimately our future bookings are all determined on how people view us when we're here. So that's the mixture of the automation and then the hand-on-hand experience. So for example, if I want to finish at 12 o'clock one day and you've got four guests coming in the afternoon, they can find their own way in, no problem. And if they need me, I'm on the end of a phone, basically.
So are all your properties quite local to you then, so that you can service your customers pretty much with ease?
So luckily, yes, for the guest accommodation side of things and what we're running, what we have at the minute are all within the town that I live in, Berwick upon Tweed. I also have a site manager as well, so we mix that up. So again, it's giving me that freedom. Could I make more money? Absolutely, but I'm staffing it the way that I'm trying to step away from it, where, you know, when I decide that I don't want to work days or weeks at a time, I can't do so. We look at other sites in other areas. If that comes off and the numbers stack, then we would hand it over to a management company. So, a company who will do all that kind of thing and build in their own automation as well. But luckily, with being in Berwick, then yeah, it's all pretty close to hand.
So I want to talk to you about the bravery of delegation then, because for some people, especially when it's your business and if you're quite new into business journey, that taking that first step into trusting somebody else to represent your business can be really nerve-wracking. So how did you find having a site manager and delegating some of the tasks that you do that you're like, oh, I'm really good at this, but I want some of my time back, so I'm going to let you take care of this. How was that for you?
Do you know what? If I look back now, nervous, but I was very fortunate that when this opportunity came, so the guest accommodation thing almost came by chance, involved in property, and then had the opportunity of an old B&B where the person was retiring. And I immediately started thinking on who could help me run this. And I had a good friend of mine, we've known each other 30 odd years, and I thought he's going to be ideal for this. So I brought him on the journey with me from day one. So he came on from the day that we purchased it, and for 6 months him and I ran it together, made all the mistakes, learnt, and then after that 6 month period I felt, right, I can step away. Innes is his name. Innes, as far as the day-to-day stuff, is amazing. I would say that certainly on interacting with people, but when it comes to that finer detail of the customer service, I think that's where I excel. So it was just wanting how I would like things done across to Innes. But it's still difficult. Like, for example, our first holiday away as a family when you're leaving Innes and the rest of the guys in complete control. It was nerve-wracking. Was I on the phone every day? Absolutely. Was I texting a lot? Yes. But I suppose you've got to be brave enough to give the autonomy to your team, or else you're never going to learn, or else you're just going to be micromanaging. And I know what it's like to be micromanaged, and I know what it was like when I had autonomy in my paid roles, and I know where I excelled. And fortunately, the guys, Innes, and the guys I've got here, they kind of excel with that. Naturally, being around is important, so the standards are kept up. It's natural for anybody to slip if there's no eyes on, but it was difficult, but I knew it's something that just had to be done if I wanted to create the life that I wanted.
Yeah, it's tough as you kind of move away from being what I call the musician in the orchestra to being the conductor. But it's such an important step that you have to take, because if you don't, you don't end up owning a business, you just end up owning a job. And that isn't the reason most of us got into business, right? We want to kind of have the profits, but also have the freedom. That's the kind of ultimate goal. It's that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that we all search for.
100%. The simple fact is I could make more money running these places myself. Laura, my wife, came on board the business last year. Her and I could run this business and the profits would increase dramatically, but we'd have no time. We'd have no that quality time, and this is exactly why I moved into this. The conductor aspect is really, really prominent to me. That's how I see myself. I'm in property, but have no expertise in the specific areas of property. When it comes to, I know my numbers and my due diligence, that's my expert area. But when it comes to, refurbing the project, no idea. So that's where I bring in the guys that I trust to help me, with the refurbishment work. When it came to running it, we had a stab at the dark, but I had to learn from people. I had to go on courses and then feed that in. When it comes to, the marketing of it, the social media, again, not my bag. So we're bringing someone to help with that. And again, I like to see myself as the conductor. It was a terminology I heard a few years ago about, being the conductor, bringing in the experts to work in those fields. That's what I'm trying to build. And if I would swap money for having that freedom, that's it for me. We live in a lovely town, but we're in the northeast of England. Let's be honest, it's not London. It's not even major cities as far as living costs. So we can live comfortably and have that freedom. That's the balance that I'm trying to get with it.
Yeah. So how's the dynamic then working with your wife? Because that's something that I've never tried. So I'm guessing it's an interesting experience, to say the least.
It is. And you know what? If I said it had been perfect, I'd be lying. But Laura is the real star of it all. As far as when I first set out on what I was doing, it was lonely. It was me, myself, and I, and she was my rock, basically. And then Laura had a great career as a dental nurse. She loved it. But when we got a couple of years into it and started and things were happening and, you know, wanting to go away, I had the freedom, but Laura didn't. So, you know, for example, let's have a weekend away. You know, let's, you know, I'm huge into my football, you know, same as yourself. So it'll be like, right, we've got an away game. We can go away as a family. I'll go to the game and be away for the weekend. There was a tie. I couldn't get away early on a Friday with work, or if we wanted a long weekend. And the more I said to Laura, I was going, do you know, we're creating this ideal scenario, we're as close as you can get to what you hope to do, but yet we're still controlled, not by me, not by my employer, but by your employer. No disrespect to them, but if you can't, they're thinking about their own benefit. If you can't get time off, then that impacts us. Yeah. So it took a long time for Laura to be convinced to come on board, won't lie, but she joined, she'd always helped, but she joined, you know, in a full-time capacity last year, and it's been a general build-up in what she's doing. But again, it's, she's in her previous roles, she'd done a lot of regulation, a lot of, you know, making sure everything was in place and checks and balances. I don't like doing that. So again, it's another aspect of the business that I get taken away. It controls the finances, which is again great, having that second pair of eyes on it. So it's, hey, we've found the dynamic right, and it's working well. Obviously, you have good days and bad days, but I've tend to learn, Jamie, that to take the opinion on well, because she tends to be right a lot more often than she's wrong. So I've learned how to... I've learned how to listen a bit better. I will say that for a fact.
That's never a bad thing. So it sounds like Laura's very systems and process driven, so that will then kind of help as you grow as a company, I guess, and want to implement those strategies into different sites. So it just means that almost like you're creating your own little McDonald's franchise, I guess, is an easy way of describing it, so that then you can take that guest out, right, we've got an opportunity to invest in here. Let's take the processes that we've done here and put them here, and then hopefully it should be a lot smoother ride.
Absolutely. That was a big point for me to bring Laura on, was that using her skills and her experience and what she's good at to help with the things that I'm not. So yeah, the systems, the processes, the procedures, the legality side is you know very much an important part, something that you have to take extremely seriously, and I want to take extremely seriously. But if you're trying to spin many other plates, it can, you know, it's the boring stuff, so you can take your eye off it. So Laura very much with that. And yeah, what we're trying to create is a cookie cutter model that we rinse and repeat if it is local. I'll be honest, I think if I was, you know, I'm in the middle of developing our third site in Berwick, which is the boutique hotel. I think it might be, a bit of overkill if I looked at any more guest accommodation sites in the local area. Yeah. So it'll be interesting if we find sites elsewhere on how Laura can replicate that with a team that's a bit further away. But these are the challenges we hope to face in the future.
Yeah. So sticking with your wife then, when the day is done and you've all finished, how do you switch off from work and then stop the, do you completely stop the work talk and it's just, right, 6 o'clock's come, that's the work cut off, we don't talk about work anymore? Or is she now getting into business as much as you are, so you're quite happy to continue that talk on?
I would be lying if I said I could switch off, Jamie. It's constantly going in my head. It's just who I am. If I wake up to go to the toilet at 3:30 in the morning, that's the brain going. You know, I've learned to stop drinking for about 3 or 4 hours before I go to bed, because my brain's just going constantly. So we do talk about it out of hours. It is a kind of 24/7 thing. It would be ideal if we could just switch off and say, right, we're doing something with the kids. But it is constantly on the go. It does dial down. You know, it's not like it takes up all conversations, but if, you know, you're facing a challenge, and being really honest, January's been a big challenge, both with just things like lending on current deals, on, you know, extra work happening on the hotel deal, which is, you know, delays, more cost. So it's very hard to switch that off. So those conversations might go on. You hope that at a time it dies down a little bit, in which case you can switch off. But even with it being a 24/7 business, you've got guests in your properties. You're kind of on it all the time, really. You know, it's not like you can say to them, "Okay, sorry, the family's now coming first at 6 o'clock." If Innes has to have days off, therefore I'm on duty with the phone. If guests need me at 7, 8 o'clock at night, then they need me and I need to sort it. And then obviously they'll probably end up discussing that with Laura once I've got it sorted. So yeah, it would be lovely to say we switch off, but no point lying. It is a kind of 24/7 thing at the minute.
But then sometimes I think that if business is one of your higher values and is something that you get passionate and excited about, I think sometimes it's people slate business people for doing that. But why not? If that's what you're passionate about and that's what gets you juiced and gets you excited, then it shouldn't be an issue, right?
Absolutely. But again, it's the reality of it, Jamie, is that it's not all sunshine and lollipops. You know, like, business is tough. You know, you know, if you want a 40-hour week, stay employed. You know, like that's the reality of it. Yeah, you might free up time. I can take the kids to school. We can have a Friday off. We can get a week's holiday. But when you're in business, my personal opinion, it's constantly on the go. You're thinking of what's happening next, what's the next project, what's coming up. And that's the thing that drives you. If you've not, you know, I would struggle. For example, if it was the ideal scenario and I built our portfolio and I had to do nothing, I would be hopeless because I would end up going into bad habits. I know, you know, you would end up having those boozy lunches. You would end up, you know, just not having to work as hard. So it's always getting that balance right of, you know, you want to have an enjoyable life, but then if it's too soft, do you become soft, you know, or slip into bad habits? So, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it keeps the drive going forward. It's what I'm passionate about, and Laura's certainly finding that passion. So, it's not a bad thing, but I will keep echoing, it's not plain sailing. If someone has a great job that they enjoy and they shut that door at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, whoever it is, amazing, good luck to them. I certainly don't have that. But then I was a little bit like that with my other jobs as well, you know, because especially in the third sector and the last role I had with the company. And the people who had hired me, I had a vested interest. I really wanted it to succeed for them. For the young people that I was working with, I wanted to succeed for them. So you don't kind of just switch off. You're always thinking about how you can help and how you can do better.
Yeah, I've had it on Saturday mornings when singers are stuck on the M6 or M25 or something, and we've then got to bounce to the venue and let them know what's happening, and or having to kind of get somebody else in to cover them. It's as much as I paint this picture of I'm always at the boys' football or I'm doing something with the kids, there are times where shit happens and you have to deal with it because it's your name above the door and you just have to get it sorted, don't you?
That's it. I was at the Europa League final, right? Arguably the greatest achievement for my team, you know, and 30 minutes before kickoff, I'm in a WhatsApp conversation with Innes sorting an issue with a guest back home. You know, so like, it was an amazing day, wonderful experience. Like, I should have been able, you know, that should have been everything. And instead, I'm like, this would not long been open as well. So it was making sure that every guest was happy because it was the reviews that were getting us going. And that's just the way it is. You know, like, you know, that's just the way it is. And I can imagine, you know, the same for you, when at least I've got one unit, you know, one property, one place, one or two staff members. You're moving here, there, and everywhere, multiple people to keep happy. It must be insane at times.
It can be. Like, some days we'll have 15 to 20 shows out. So it can be a bit of a headache. But that's why I have staff, and that's why we delegate, and that's why we have systems and processes that help us navigate those things. So how do you fit everything that your kids do around your business then? Because it seems like you're really busy with that, so it's obviously a challenge to get all the kids' stuff in too.
Well, yeah, basically that's first in the diary. So as well as everything I do, I'm also the coach of my son's football team, which when it first happened a few years ago, it wasn't so much I stepped forward, was that everyone else stepped back. And I had done coaching 25 years ago with a group of lads. It was great, but I thought, I've done my stint, it's now time for someone else. But you end up taking on with a couple of great parents. So I've got swimming lessons 2 nights a week with either of the kids, then both kids do football, and then you've got the football on the Saturday for the kids' football. Then obviously I'm trying to get to my game as well, that watching Rangers. So that's the first thing in the diaries. You know, they are the, and that's the beauty of what I do, is that they are first in the diaries and then everything's worked around it. You know, obviously having, you know, some time with Laura as well, whether it's even just, you know, grabbing lunch, not business stuff. You know, it'd be easy to say we do have a lot of time together now working together, but actually time away from that. So yeah, that's first in the diary. And then I'm fortunate where you can structure your day or your week around those.
Yeah, that's exactly how I do mine. Sunday night or Monday morning, straight onto my Google Calendar, looking what I've got, kids stuff first, and then bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, that's it.
From there. So over the years then, have you had many coaches and mentors that have kind of helped teach you these things, or is it something that you searched out and just learned as you go?
Fortunately, I've had great coaches. So again, you know, probably just not drifting along in life, but wasn't really aware of personal development or how people can help you. And then as I started to get serious in property, I had a property coach I signed up with, a gentleman called Paul McFadden and his team up in Glasgow. And it wasn't just about the property, it was about the systems, the processes, the procedures, about your diary, the mindset, you know, how it all links in. So that was a great starting point. It really opened my eyes and thought, wow, there's a bit more here. And then I know, you know, that the next person I'm going to talk about has had a big impact on both our lives and a lot of people's, Paul Mott. So I came to a natural end with my work with the property guys. I thought, right, I've went as far as the property side of things. But I needed to get my shit together, to be honest. You know, if I'm really honest with myself, I was putting on this front and building a business, but I wasn't right myself. So I came, you know, I was, you know, a lot of bad habits and just generally not looking after myself. And letting things get to me as well. And I was like, there's got to be a better way. And then it just so happened that I was following Paul and his stuff came to the forefront. And he's an hour down the road from me. And it resonated with me, you know, the way he speaks, you know, and everything he was talking about. I was like, this guy's talking to me. So I signed up with Paul, done a couple of his short courses, and then moved on to working with him, you know, for a yearly basis. And that's been, you know, moving into my third year now. And that's had a dramatic impact and made me happier, which ultimately makes my kids happier and makes Laura happier. You know, I won't dress it up any way that I've seen a dramatic improvement in how I am and therefore the people around me are in the last 3 years. And that's just down to Paul and the work he does and applying the work that he does. Because you can get all the information in the world, but if you don't apply it, then it's a waste of time.
Well, the internet is full of information. Everything that every coach teaches and every guru, it doesn't matter what it is all out there on Google, it's all out there on YouTube. But what having, I think, a coach or a mentor or sign up to do a course does is save you time. And it doesn't matter how much money you've got in the world, the most precious commodity we have is time. And if a coach can teach you how to do it better and you can learn from their mistakes, then I think that's always the most valuable thing that you can learn.
Absolutely. You, echoing exactly everything I'm thinking, Jamie. I talk a lot about on my social media about creating time. So I try and help people who are maybe asset rich and time poor to benefit in property. So, you know, that there's many ways that I can do that. And what a hypocrite I would have been if I'm saying I can help you create more time and then creating less time for myself. It would just make no sense. So, yeah, that having that and just seeing how it can be done. And also, yeah, it like not just the business side, but the mindset side. And then you meet like-minded people as well, like yourself, like, you know, many others that we all want the same thing. It might be in a different format, but really it is all the same thing. We want to have time. We want to have great experiences. We want to have the best life possible with the people that we love. How we get there is just by putting the work in. And the more work you put in now to get the systems and processes and procedures in place means you get even more time later on down the line.
Yeah. It's amazing how something as simple and boring as systems and processes can create such great life experiences.
And that's why not nobody. That's why a lot of people don't, because it's boring. Nobody wants to do boring stuff, and me included.
Yeah.
But you push through that at the start and see where the benefits are. You know, still to this day, I could say I'm not planning this week because I've got lots on and it's reactive. It's just utter shite. If you know, you can plan and allow time for if you've got to be reactive, but if you're not prepared, then at some point it's going to fall down and the walls will come in on you.
Well, one of the tricks I've learned since starting this podcast, I was speaking to a guy called John Lamerton, and I used to be very proud of how my diary between kind of 7 till kind of 7 at night was kind of just full of blue stuff rigidly put all in there. And then he made me realise that I needed white space around it, because I wasn't giving myself any time to breathe, any time to react to anything, or any time to think. Because I think thinking's a really undervalued use of time. Mm-hmm. Because people think that you've got to be bang, 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 doing. And yet if you don't give yourself time to think and to react and to breathe, then it's really difficult to grow. Because the gym is probably the best example of that. You go to the gym, you exercise all your muscles, and then you need time to let the muscles repair themselves.
Yep.
And we don't do that within our business lives.
Yep. No, you're right. And I would say I was guilty of that as well. You know, you think, like you say, the blue blocks, and you're like, yeah, that's, you know, great, right? We're keeping busy. But then, you know, you're absolutely done. Now, certainly I am. By the end of the day, and then you're not able to be the best version of yourself for the people that matter the most. You know, so again, I've heard it in the past, but you know, if you're giving that what's left of you to the most important people, that's not on for them. So you know, run yourself into the ground without those gaps and those spaces to get the breather to recover. You're just going to, like you say, the family's just getting the leftovers, basically.
So what are some of the things that you've learned over the years that you've seen kind of come out in your kids? What are some of the positive habits that you've learned that you now kind of seen in your little mini-me's?
So a big thing for me, call it affirmations, call it, you know, sayings, whatever it be, is that, you know, I'm constantly talking to myself in a better way than what I used to. And what I've tried to get across, and certainly comes across now, is I've verbalised that with the kids as well, so they are constantly saying it. So each morning, I have a couple of things that I say to them, it's just getting it into their brain over and over. So the first thing is I'll ask them, who do they love? And the response that I try to generate was that they love themselves, and why, you know, I use things like because they're brave, because they're smart, because they're beautiful, just teaching themselves to talk nice about themselves, and that now rolls off the tongue, second nature. And they'll ask me as well, what's the three most important things today? They say, what's the six words? Be happy, be kind, have fun. And so that has really came across, and certainly I am certainly I'm proud of how that's came across as well. And it reminds me to do it, because it's very easy to get sucked into negative thinking, especially when times are tough. And hearing them say that, going, no, I need to be good, kind to myself as well. My son has started doing cold showers at night, which I think is absolutely amazing. He's seven, and he's like, you know, I'll be honest, if I can do the dishes and avoid the shower time, the bath time, that's what I try and do, being really honest about it, right? Because I get to listen to a podcast and, you know, like you say, hands in soap and water drying, that's fine, because I'm listening probably to a football podcast. But he's shouting up the stairs, come up, and I know, and he's only in for like 10 seconds or whatever, but I think it's setting a real nice precedent, because he sees me doing it in the mornings. You know, you'll see me, if I have a cold shower or I go in the cold plunge outside. So that's setting some good traits as well. I think I wasn't the best communicator until a few years ago, very much bottle things up, very much everything would just come out, very, you know, reactive, anger, to be honest, you know, if a situation wasn't working out for me. I feel I'm getting better at that, and certainly I'm trying to relate that to the kids as well when they're not, you know, at their best. You know, so saying it's okay to be angry, it's okay to feel upset, you know, it's natural, rather than getting onto the case for being it. Now, listen, we're not perfect. There's times when I do get angry when they've not done something wrong, but that's, I think, starting to shine through as well, is that they understand that it's okay to not be okay. Like, it's okay to feel angry, it's okay to feel sad, it's okay, it's just how they deal with that, you know. Listen, far from ideal, far from perfect, but it's nice to see that they try and do it a bit differently at times.
Yeah, I think it's, we try and suppress our emotions sometimes too much and not allow ourselves to cry, to be angry. It's all those negative things that we're not allowed to do sometimes, and I think that it's important that you do, because it helps cleanse the soul. It helps you kind of release those inner toxins and those inner poisons, so that then you can press the reset button, go again, and be happy.
I am the biggest crier on the planet now, Jamie. I don't know why.
Like when Klopp goes at the end of the season on that last home game, I'm definitely going to be challenging you.
Well, I get that. I know, listen, I've seen that myself in football terms, but I mean, I just get emotional over everything now. Disney has an absolute unbeaten record on me. Every single Disney film has got me at tears. It's like they're like 40 for 40 or something now, and as I don't think I've watched a Disney film. But even like some Bluey, right? So my kids still love Bluey, and I'm getting emotional at Bluey, a cartoon aimed at, you know, 5 to 8 year olds, because of the message behind it. So probably my old man, showed very little emotion, or showed anger. Like, you know, I won't lie, he was, again, I'm the absolute spitting dab of my dad, you know, facially, behaviourally. And I'm quite comfortable with the kids seeing us cry, because I want them to be able to be that way as well. As you say, it gets it out. Get that emotion out. Let's not, you know, build it up. You're talking about emotion. They see a lot of emotion from me. You know, Laura even is like, at times, what? what is setting off this to, you know?
Yeah, Claire's nudging me. We'll be watching something on TV and she's like, are you crying again? I totally, totally get that.
Yeah. So, listen, you know, it was, and again, repeating what everybody said, but, you know, men had to be strong, show no emotion, blah, blah, blah. What good did that do? You know, in the long term, what good did that do for yeah, because obviously there's times and there's places, but, you know, bottling all that up, it came out in other ways. I'm not a fool to think that wasn't the case. I'm certainly got no problems with talking about that, with showing it. Yeah. It's who I am.
So what's the biggest lessons your kids have taught you then? What since you've become a dad, what do you think they've taught you?
An amazing question, that. I think they've certainly taught me that I know nothing, right? Is that I thought I had it all figured out, and I know absolutely nothing, and we're all just winging it. We're all just, you know, flying by the seat of our pants when it comes to this stuff. And that, listen, that goes for business. I will do numbers, we'll do figures, but really, do you know what's going to happen? No, but have a go. And the same with the kids as well. So being humble enough to realise that I know fuck all, and I'm just constantly learning. They've taught me that it is okay to be emotional. It is okay to have that soft side. They've taught me that family is everything. That my four and four, five, will include the dog because he's like a baby in the family. But like, that is the most important thing in the world. Nothing outwith that. Everything else can be fixed. It can be solvable. There's no issue that can't be challenged, as long as those three stroke four people are happy and safe. I'm the happiest man in the world if that's the case. It was funny because my wife was away this week for a night, very rarely away, and we're just talking about how much I missed her, how much the kids missed her, how much she missed being away. And it's the same when I'm away. You know, I'm not away that often now, but even away, like, say, you know, for the quarterlies, you know, for the Paul Mock quarterlies and stuff like that, I hate being away. I love being around the people, but I hate being away from home. And it's taught me what's important. I was, in my younger years, very superficial. It was all about labels. It was all about how I looked. It was all about what people thought of me. Don't mind admitting that. I'm sure a lot of people are exactly the same. Yeah. It's taught me that, yeah, that those three people, if they're happy, nothing else matters, really.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So we're coming towards the end of the podcast episode right now. So I'm going to ask a few quick fire questions. So what are the key three behaviours you would like to install into people?
I think three behaviours would be compassion. Everybody has something going on behind those eyes, in between those ears. There's always something going on. So just be aware that people have got their own life going on, and be compassionate. Understand that, you know, they're doing the best for them. So, you know, be understanding in any situation. I have to work hard at that at times, especially driving. I've still not figured out the road rage stuff yet. I talk about this cool and chill guy, but I go up from 1 to 100. Yeah, compassion, you know, empathy, whatever way you want to wrap that up. A feature is, how can I word this right? Sorry, and you're saying these are quick fire, but the install to do better, to strive for better. Because I've found that over the past few years, that everything is in our own control, that we can create whatever we want if we work hard enough at it. I fear that I'm going to create soft children because we are doing well. So that's a constant battle, you know, and how we get through that. But yeah, I think...
That's a really interesting thing that I'd like to stop, and then we'll go back to the thing, because that's something that I fear as well, because we have done quite well and we're able to present these opportunities to our kids, and they get this and they get that. And like, my oldest lad is 14 and he's really into his football, so I'm quite happy to give him spends and let him concentrate on his school, on his football, and then he's got a bit of free time to do as he pleases. Whereas when I was growing up, at the age of 14, 15, I was having to look for a part-time job if I wanted money. I was having to do chores around the house and this, that and the other. Whereas I've made it, by my own choice, a lot easier for him. How do you think that... Do you think that doing those kind of things for your kids is going to be negative or positive?
It's a really difficult question. Going back on what you said, Jamie, I was working in the bookies at 14. My old man was like, if you want money, you can graft. And that really installed it in me. But obviously, I don't want them working for us at 14, but it's getting that balance right. I want to give them the best experience possible. I want them to look back when their parents and say, my childhood was amazing. We done this, we done that. And whether that is extravagant holidays or whether it's we were out walking on a Saturday night, stargazing along, you know, the spot at the beach of the promenade, which we done last Saturday. That's what I want. But naturally, I want the better things. I want the nice holidays. I want the excursions. I want, you know, that. Why don't we? But so I'm really challenged a lot in my brain of how we get that balance right. And I'll be honest, I've not figured it out yet. You know, I've not figured out on how we do it. We are strict on what they get and what they're given, but it's still hard. And listen, we're not in a financial position to spoil, but they are, you know, they do get, you know, a lot of stuff like all kids do, you know, or most kids do nowadays. So I'm kind of losing track maybe on what I was saying, but it's a real head, not a headache, but it's something that I battle with all the time, especially now as my daughter's into middle school, starting to grow up a bit, you know, it'll start coming about fashion, about makeup, about, you know, this and that shortly. You know, my son's already, you know, got an eye for fashion and likes his Nike and likes, you know, what he likes. And it's, you want them to have that, but you can't just keep doing it, you know.
Both my kids have it for kind of like Christmas and birthdays and things like that. They don't get too many of those things out of those situations unless it's something that's really, really needed.
Yeah, and I think we've tried to do it that way as well. Certainly Christmas and certainly birthdays. Do you know where it is, right? And I'll be really honest, the balance is because what I've done is I've said I would like X amount of holidays a year, and we future paced that because in the not too distant future, they're probably going to not be wanting to go on holiday with us. You know, it's probably not, you know, wanting to hang out with us. So I'm like, this next, how can I put it? Next 4 or 5 years is really important to me, where I want to have as many amazing experiences. But then that means more holidays. They think that they're going to get those 3/4 holidays a year. They think then that they need new trainers for the holiday because I'm like, oh, you know, let's, you know, do you need new trainers? You know, because I want new trainers for holiday. I've got a problem with trainers, Jamie, right? That's my thing, right?
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's getting the balance and I've not got it right probably, but I really want them to have, because there will come the time when they're on holiday and they're dragging their heels and looking at the floor and on their phone and wish they were with their mates and stuff like that. And I know that's going to come. So I'm trying to create these amazing memories before that happens. And that is creating a spoiled attitude or they get, you know, too much. So yeah, this is, you know what, this is going to be something great to talk about with Laura when I go back, because I'm like, right, we're going to have to come up with a plan with this because I've no idea.
I think it's just balance, isn't it? Because like when you talk about trainers, as a kid, I always wanted Air Jordans, but couldn't afford them. Mm-hmm. And now both of my kids had a pair of Air Jordans before I had a pair. And then at one birthday, I was like, right, it's my birthday. I'm having a pair of Air Jordans. But for them, it's not as special as it was for me. Do you know what I mean? Because that was what Dad got, and they wanted it. So I totally relate to going on holiday. Right, holiday, need a new pair of trainers for holiday. Got to be fresh pair of seats. It's got to be done. So it's a real fine balance, isn't it? To get that.
I remember, listen, I don't know how old you are, Jamie, but I grew up when Michael Jordan was the man, right? And Jordan 4s were out, and I used to look at them and think, wow. And it was the same as Puma Kings or Copa Mundials, right? Or, you know, and I remember, So I loved Diego Maradona, loved number 10, Puma Kings, that's what I wanted. And my old man was brilliant because he went, when you're good enough to wear Puma Kings, you can get a pair of Puma Kings, right? And that always shot us down. And then I had to save to get the trainers and what have you. And now it's a bit different. You know, it is a bit different. You know, we were where they do kind of, you know, there's a sale on everywhere. You know, you can pick them up here, you can search online and find them best place, wherever it is, so that you kind of do have that mentality, oh, it's just 40 quid, it's just 50 quid, and it is setting the wrong precedent for later down the line. It's got me thinking there, Jamie, absolutely.
The thing that I'm thinking of right now is Adidas Predators have just come out, they've got a big kind of thing. The amount of, like, Charlie's age, 7, the kids that are turning up in Predators. So I went online and had a little look. Do you know how much they are for kids?
And the £35?
No, the ones with the fold over tongue.
Okay. I'll say 80 quid.
£110.
No way.
For a pair of kids' football boots. And the 7-year-olds are wearing these, mind. 7. And I think, well, sometimes we bought Charlie a pair of night boots for his Christmas, or actually it wasn't me, it was my mum and dad. They wanted to buy him something and they were expensive, they were 70 quid, but Charlie's into his football, he'll play football 3-4 times a week, so we'll get loads of use out of that. And I'm quite lucky that his feet grow quite steadily, so like one size per year and all is good, so we'll get his value out of that. But £110 on a pair of football boots for kids, it's 240 quid for adults. So Jack's got
no, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Because obviously I've been looking somewhere up, because immediately the Predators came out and I was like, I want a pair of them to go to the shops in. Like, you know, I was never good enough for Predators. And I know a couple of the coaches at the local football team have bought them just for wearing on the sidelines, basically, you know, like, and anyways.
But that's child of dreams, isn't it? That's going back to David Beckham times 20 years ago and that kind of thing.
So. That was it. Well, yeah. Listen, I'm even before that. Was Craig Johnson was the boy. Like, he was the first one that created them, that used to play for Liverpool, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I can remember them coming out. And then obviously it was Beckham. But yeah, listen, you've hit the case in point. Seen the Predators. When I'd love to see Brody in a pair of Predators. My son, he's 7. And I'm thinking, right, when the next size up, I'm already planning how to spend money on a pair of boots that, with the greatest respect, are going to make no difference to him whatsoever. Right? He got new boots at Christmas. He wanted CR7 Nikes or whatever. Again, yeah. I have no idea. We managed to find a pair of like Nike football boots, orange, that, you know, and on the Nike website that were in a sale. He loves them. There could have been CR7. I mean, CR could be Craig Rowan, not Cristiano Ronaldo, for all that it stands for me. But it's. And then, you know, there's new colourways come out every 6 weeks. You know, you go to the football and he's talking about his favourite players, seeing them on the telly. So it's a natural form. And again, it's the lifestyle that we have now. It's the way of the world where you've got to have everything new. You've got to have the next thing that comes out. It's murder, but make no mistake, I'll not be paying 110 quid for the pair of Predators for my son, that's for sure.
So I'll get back to the quickfire questions because we've gone on a proper kind of roundabout tour there. What was the first record you ever bought?
Cuddly Toy by Roachford.
What a tune.
It is a belter, by the way. Yeah. An absolute cracker. That was my first 7-inch single that I bought. Absolutely.
Have you met him?
Eh? Really?
Yeah. I used to do a thing called the Songwriting Academy, and they did a showcase thing for Songwriter of the Year, and I went down and did some tunes acoustically at this night, and he was there and got to meet him. So
amazing. Well, I still, like, when it comes, like, if I've got, you know, whatever, Heart and 80s or Absolute 80s or whatever on, and it comes on, I still lose my mind and think about it as when it was then. And then the first album I bought was CNC Music Factory's. I think it was called Gonna Make You Sweat. Oh, man, yeah, that was my first CD. And Technotronic Pump Up the Jam on vinyl as well. If I had that on vinyl now, I'd be cool. But anyway, sigh.
I've got a big stack of vinyl in the loft somewhere, I think. So what's the most memorable place you visited?
So I think if the biggest memory for me is that I'm a Disney nut. I was fortunate to go there as a kid with my parents, and that's a big thing for me. So going with my kids to Disney World in Florida and with Laura has been probably the best memories that jump out. Other best place memories, I was a club, a raver, whatever you want to call it, in a past life. So going to festivals across Europe, Sona in Barcelona, Exit Festival, Serbia, like them kind of things. I still remember those times as vivid as that happened yesterday. So yeah, those are probably the ones. And then travelling Europe with Rangers as well. They're kind of the whether it was the music thing, the football thing, and the family, they're probably the big one. But yeah, being to two European finals with Rangers, you know, seeing them play in the Camp Nou up against, you know, Messi, Ronaldinho, Thierry Henry, Xavi, Iniesta, I got absolutely pumped, but it was a joy to watch it. So yeah, they're the kind of memories that jump out, and for the places that we were at. Barcelona just has got a special thing for us both, for Sona, for the clubbing aspect, and then for the football, managing to watch Rangers there as well. So yeah.
The thing I always think about Barcelona, I took Jack there when he was about 5, 6, and when you're outside the stadium, or before it was all changed because they're in the middle of rebuilding it, to me, it looked like an NCP car park.
Aye.
And then when you go in there, it's this glorious, iconic stadium. It's quite surreal.
I don't know if you've like been to a game, but the away end is literally, like, you have to duck when the moon comes out. It's that far up, and it is like watching... remember the game Sensible Soccer, where you're that high up? And it was, you know, people would say it was a poor view, but it was Frank Rijkaard's team, so it was just the year before Pep took over. And it had Yaya Toure, Xavi and Iniesta, and you're watching them from above, and the way they were just popping it around. And this was before Tiki-Taka came, and I was just like, it was just like watching a different sport. It was incredible. And then there's our midfield, Barry Ferguson, a guy called Barin Hemdani, just chasing shadows all night. So I remember it as clear as day. But yeah, it's but like the new camp, you go, it's all right, and then you go in, you go, wow, yeah. Yeah.
We got tickets, home tickets. I think we just went for a La Liga game, and it was Almeria. They beat them 4-0. Messi, Suarez, and Neymar were playing up front. But we were in the middle tier, so it wasn't quite as up in the gods as you were.
This is something that I've done for my kid. So we are going to Florida in April. Mm-hmm. My son is Messi daft. And I've managed to get tickets for an Inter Miami game. And again, ridiculous amount to spend for what you are equivalently watching of like League One football with a few superstars in it, right? It's ridiculous. But again, it's an experience to say that he's going to see, in my opinion, the best footballer there's ever been. Mm-hmm. All I'm doing now, Jamie, is just praying he doesn't get injured between now and April. I'm like, I've never taken as much interest into Miami's like social media, making sure that he's at every training session and stuff.
Well, they've still got Suarez, and they got a few other ex-Barcelona ones there now, so there'll be some talent on show.
Well, I've got it prepared in my head. I'm like, if Messi's not fit, I'll go, do you know what football's about? Ball retention. Yeah, watch Sergio Busquets. Watch a guy that can make 98% of passes. He's not going to buy it, but I'll try and win him over on that anyways.
It's such a different atmosphere as well, MLS. We went Orlando and saw Kaká on his last game. It was a charity game.
Oh,
and
really?
Big street party outside, and it's just, it is very, very cool. Very, very different because the weather's nice and everyone's there in shorts and t-shirts, and it's a bit more kind of fiesta feel, but it's really cool.
Oh, cool, man. I look forward to that.
So what are the top three books that you would recommend to people?
So I think for me was Atomic Habits. Is a massive one for me. It really, really resonated. The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, I think, is another one that just, like, I really managed to shake that off a few years ago. And I'm very, like, I put myself out there on social media for my business, and that was something that really worked for me. So they're the two main that jump out. again, not the biggest reader, so you know, that again, that's one of my things that I say I try and do. You know, I could go down the route of the third one being what do you call it's my brain. This is what happens. It was the audio book. Oh, what's David Goggins? Yeah, like when you're listening to that, like again, you know, his one, and I listened to it audibly. Through audiobook, that kind of struck a chord. But you know, I've listened to the audiobooks or the reading of the books, but my reading is more around, you know, football stats and things. If I've got books, it's been autobiographies of players or you know, reviews of seasons or things like that. So I'm not the biggest reader, but those two, Atomic Habits, is something I work on still to this day, and I'll revisit it. And the subtle art of not giving a fuck.
So when you're reading an autobiography, just see if you do something similar to what I do when I read football autobiographies. Do you then see pictures that, say, James Milner or Jordan Henderson were two ones that I've written, that you think, well, if I did it this way in business, that would work for that? Do you ever get those kind of thoughts come through your head when you're reading autobiographies?
Do you know what? I'll be honest, Nate. No, I haven't. I haven't linked it to business per se. It tends to be Rangers ones that I read, and I tend to think about, like, the talk about, you know, crowds or events at games or things that happened. Fortunately, I've been at a lot of them, and I'm like, nah, I don't remember it like that, or, you know, I kind of, you know, like that kind of stuff. Maybe it's the nerd in us that likes to talk about how I've been at a lot of games, and certainly when Rangers were arguably the biggest team in Britain in the 90s and the success, I literally, you know, I grew up through that. It was like, wow, you know, so I'm spoiled, basically. So I always link back to that. No, I've never applied it to how I would apply it, because, to be honest, if I was applying what the Rangers team was when I looked up to them, they were all bevvies, you know, drinkers and shaggers, so I don't think it would work very well for us right now.
Yeah, I've read Souness's autobiography, and that wouldn't work.
No, not the way that he dealt with players back then. If I was to deal with any issues with staff or with Laura like the way Souness dealt with it back then, nah, I don't think it would go very far.
So, one last thing, where can people find you, Craig?
So, the usual social media channels, majority of my stuff is on Instagram, at Craig Rowan Official. I've got my own personal Facebook page and Craig Rowan Property on Facebook, and I'm on LinkedIn as well. Not the biggest fan of LinkedIn. I try and be a bit more real than what LinkedIn is, to be honest, but yeah. Instagram, and then, you know, our website is www.woodmanandgreenwoodcapital.com. So Woodman and Greenwood Capital is our business. Actually, that, you know, the influence of my parents, Woodman and Greenwood are the middle names of my parents. So so it's quite cool that we've managed to work that in. So that's our property business, or at least the main one.
Cool. Well, Craig, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you very much for giving up your time and joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give it up for Mr. Craig Rowan?
Thank you, Jamie. It's been brilliant.